time, but we talked about it on Friday. Here on Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Wait, you got Kramer coming back from the... And he had a no-hitter into the seventh. Then you had Eflin, who's been brilliant, Nolan. And then Corbin Burnes, your ace, who actually pitched well yesterday. You're thinking, sweet, especially when you win the opener, at least two out of three. And then Nolan McGraw, who's back, and we'll find out where you've been. The bats go into sleepy time over the course of the three-game series. Yesterday, 0 for 7, runners in scoring position, 1 for 6 Saturday. Even Friday's win, they were 0 for 3, and we've talked about it the entirety of the second half of the season on the show. Starting rotation decimated by injuries, but done enough to be competitive. Bullpen is what it is. Inconsistent, sketchy, hold your breath. Offense is killing them. Brandon Hyde said after yesterday's game, since the All-Star break, it has been a struggle to generate runs because the at-bats, even Santander, we're swinging for the fences, we're not shortening swings, we're not putting the ball in play. First and second, nobody out yesterday in the eighth inning. Three straight strikeouts. Don't even advance a runner, much less bring them home. The offensive approach has been somewhat debatable, and I get you lost Westberg, big loss for your offense. Ryan Mountcastle doesn't hit home runs like he used to, but still is a productive run producer. Those are big L's. Jorge Mateo's speed element is no longer part of the equation. But Adley Rutschman's been brutal since the start of July. He's had three home runs since the end of June. And he's in a .170 in September, .190 since the All-Star break. Taters has cooled off a little bit. Same with Moo Man. Right now, outside of Gunnar Henderson, Nolan McGraw, the Orioles' offense is, shall we say, offensive.
Right, and it really is unacceptable. Because, sure, you lose Jordan Westberg. I'm not understating that loss. It is a big, big loss. You'd love to have him back. But there's simply too much star power elsewhere in this lineup for just one guy leaving to completely derail you. And Adley Rutschman, he's at the top of my blame list, if there was one right now. By the way, Hyde still batting him second every day. I think I left before vacation and was saying, hey, how about you move him down, get someone else up in the lineup. I come back from vacation, still saying the same thing.
Who do you want to bat second, though?
Well, let it finish his thought.
Anybody.
Go ahead.
Anybody. I mean, look, you know, before Arias got hurt, I thought he was a candidate to move up, but you got to try something. And Hyde did have a quote, which you read the quote. There was no audio after the game, but I was reading some post-game quotes that Hyde was basically asked, hey, what can you do to shake up the lineup? And he said, I've done everything already. I'm paraphrasing there, but it was something close that what else am I supposed to do? And I get it to some extent that it is on the players to, you know, execute and not swing for the fences, but you can't have a struggling guy just batting second every day just simply because of his draft status or who he is. You know, if he's not hitting well, he's not above being demoted.
And we've talked about it with Cedric Mullins. When you hit, it's not a sample size. It's kind of a trend. It's been 2 months plus for Adley Rutschman not being able to hit the baseball. By the way, Cedric Mullins is starting to get hot here into September. But Holiday scuffling. Kowser scuffling here. Taters, and I'm not going to get on him fully, but he had a couple of opportunities over the weekend to produce, and he didn't. Because he basically was the offense for a month and a half. O'Hearn's power numbers have dropped dramatically. They have a lot of guys just not producing with the stick. Since that June 20th win against the Yankees, 17-5, they're in first place. They're 24 games over 500. They're 33-37. I think we have to come to the harsh reality that they're a mediocre ball club right now. Would they benefit from the fact that so are the Yankees. Cleveland's had their rough patches. Houston might be the scariest team of them all when it is all said and done once we get into October. They're going to make the playoffs. They could still win the division. They could still finish with the number one seed. But unless the bats, and keep in mind, let's not forget, they led the majors in home runs for months. They were the top run scoring team in baseball for months. They were the top OPS team for months. They led the league in runs per game for months. The last 2 months, they've been the exact opposite of that. They started off well in September, bashing away against Colorado and Chicago, but they've got to get it together. They're taking on the Red Sox, three-game set starting tonight. Brian Bayo's earned run averages, high fours Can you get it done? Cade Povich coming off his best start. Going to turn around and it's going to be the Green Monster almost literally right on top of him. How does he respond to that sort of thing? But if I'm assessing blame for the Orioles not being in first place, I'm throwing the offense under the bus. And we're starting to see from them, the manager, the players themselves, that they're starting to get very frustrated with their inability to just string together hits in these big innings. They just, if they don't hit homers, they don't score. And that's not a recipe for success. That's actually a football thing from our Baltimore Game Day Uncensored stuff.
Now, where are you guys on the whole Kobe Mayo thing? He's the September call-up. Kind of probably saw that coming when the rosters expanded that he was going to be the guy, especially with Kerstad still banged up. But he's not getting that everyday play time. And now with Arias injured, you're seeing a lot of Nick Maton playing third. I personally speaking, I know Mayo's still not that guy that's super dominant force at the plate, but he hasn't had a ton of reps, shaky defense as well. I just think given your other options at third, I'd like to see him sprinkled in a little bit more and not just pinch hitting situations like yesterday.
Well, hold on. I think he's looking for answers.
Let me get old Brandon.
You know, that's what call Hider.
Hey, Hider. If he's here, why don't you play him? You know, and Maton's a versatile guy, brings a little positional versatility, some speed to the equation, but there's a reason he's been kind of out there. He was with the Tigers last year. I mean, you're going to ride and die with Kobe Mayo, who looks pretty clueless at the plate right now. Did get the walk, which put that first and second situation where the meat of your lineup couldn't succeed. Are you willing to go there?
I don't think. Do you trust him, Bob?
With the glove, no. But
I think, with the bat,
I think he might be able to run in a little fastball, hit that thing 450, and get himself off and running here.
That's why I think you got to roll the dice. I mean, your lineups, you're, what, 3 runs in 3 games, 4 runs in 4 games, anything. I mean, if he runs into a fastball, hits a 3-run homer, he doubles their run production for the weekend.
And by the way, the Yankees did take 2 out of 3 from the Cubs, but it's not like they were lighting up the scoreboard over the weekend either. They lost 2-1. We'll get into that during the AL East report. But we are now, let me do some math here, 82-62, we're 18 games left.
Yes.
That sound about
Yankees
right?
Yankees have 19, Orioles have 18.
18 games left, regular season, Fenway Park tonight, 7-10, Cade Povich against Brian Bayo, 12-game winner, earned run average, a little bit inflated, very talented, hard-throwing young right-hander. But unless the offense gets off the schneid here, I mean, they've had 1 3-game winning streak since the All-Star break. I mean, I said it, 2 weeks ago, Vinny, I believe it was. I'd be more surprised if the Orioles made a deep run than I would be if they were quietly dismissed into the October night in the postseason. But then again, with the mediocrity of baseball here in 2024, they might get Texas Rangers hot, and who knows. But until the bats start to play a little bit, hey, you'll get Grayson back soon. Looks like Coulomb and Jacob Webb are going to come back to help the bullpen. That's all great. When are you going to put up these crooked numbers? I think the offense is right now killing them more than anything else.
Yeah,
some bonehead defensive gaffes.
The only thing that I'm hoping for, Bob, is you know, last year they were runners in scoring. They were kicking everybody's
number
butt.
One.
Right. All right. And then they couldn't hit in the playoffs. Maybe it's just the opposite this year. This year they're going in, not being able to do anything, and then they go crazy in the playoffs. Well, that's my hope.
Yeah, not making one-to-one comparison, but or apples to apples, as they say. Hey, Texas had a losing record on the road last year and rolled through the postseason.
And Arizona was
but I'm saying Texas was doing nothing but winning on the road in the playoffs. So the Orioles get shut out 2-0. I'm sure Corbin Burns went home yelling at somebody about the lack of run support, kind of reminiscent of his first few starts. But Orioles are only a half game out of first. They're at Fenway. They're still in a very strong playoff situation. We'll get into that as the show progresses. As a matter of fact, Matt Weirich from the Baltimore Sun joins us at 11:30. NFL full kickoff weekend started on Friday. We'll come back and get into that. Ravens were off. They got the Raiders coming to town as big favorites coming up Sunday at M&T Bank Stadium. Possible big injury for Green Bay.
At quarterback on
Friday night. Terps, 9.5 favorite.
Special teams killed them. They did some dumb stuff. I was so pissed off right before halftime. We were talking about it earlier, and I was texting you throughout the game. Michigan State's lining up to kick a 55-yard field goal, and the kicker, you know, I mean, he got no shot at making it.
He had
that.
His, like, pencil protector in his pocket. He's like a walk-on.
Right, and he misses it, but the Terp guy is off sides and then gives him another chance right before the half. Then they get momentum. He makes it. Then they get momentum, and then the Terps missed a 41-yard. Special teams killed him in that game. You got to in tight games like that, you got to do the little things right, and they did. Look at, like, my Cyclones. That freshman, 54-yarder to win it at the buzzer.
On the road, no less. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Got the AFC North report coming up later the hours. That started. Good thing about the Ravens, even though they lost in a very competitive game, everybody else did too, except for Pittsburgh, and they didn't even score a touchdown in their win in Atlanta. So a busy sports weekend. You want to comment on any of it, feel free to do so. It's Vinny Haney. Nolan's back here on The Fan. David Montgomery, basically carried them literally to victory as he got into the end zone there. He was moving the chains throughout that drive in overtime as Detroit in a rematch of the playoff game last year between the Rams. They emerged victorious just like they did in the playoff game. L.A. possibly, though, may have lost Puka Nacua for a while as he hurt his knee in the first half, did not return.
And he had hurt that in during training camp, too. So maybe it wasn't totally healed yet, kind of thing. But, I mean, Cooper Kupp had a hell of a day. He had 21 targets. 21 targets. He had 14 catches. But they lost, like, a couple of linemen during that game, too. And, I mean, their offensive line was, shattered.
Yeah.
Shattered. I mean, Stafford had a hell of a day, threw for over 300. And he's kind of what kept him in it.
Yeah, he was running for his life a lot, though. Not as nimble as he was when he came out of Georgia way back when. But Jared Goff, he was workmanlike in that victory. Montgomery, outstanding, 17 carries, 91 yards, and the game-winning touchdown. Jameson Williams, he had a big night, over 120 yards receiving with a TD, averaged 24-plus per reception. Dan Campbell, head coach of the Lions, had stated that watch out for him having a big season. Well, if that's any indication, he certainly will. And St. Brown, their real stud, he had a relatively quiet night.
Yeah, he was real quiet. And St. Brown only had 3 catches for 13, but Williams was the man. You know, 5 for 121, and he also had a 13-yard rush. But he can go. I mean, he transferred to Alabama from Ohio State and had one great year there, then tore his ACL, I think it was. And then what they said was he's finally matured. He was kind of a little immature at the time. Remember, he was gambling and doing that kind of stuff.
He got popped.
Yep. So he's grown up, and it sure looks like it, and which is a good sign for the Lions, who, you know, they look like they're off and running. Look like Hutchinson was good again. He was all over the field.
He's a stud. So the Rams, they take one on the chin, but Detroit, they're one of the favorites to win said Super Bowl. There were some other games of note. We'll get into the AFC North report coming up here in a few minutes, but if we look at a team that's trying to level up a little bit, maybe, how about the Philadelphia Eagles on Friday night against Green Bay? And after Philadelphia, year removed from a Super Bowl, they had the best record in the NFL for many, many, many weeks last year, number one in Vinny's 30 dozen. Mm-hmm. And then they just plummeted down the stretch, went quietly in the playoffs against Tampa. But in a very entertaining Friday night game in Brazil, slippery turf and all of that. Philly gets to win 34-29. Saquon Barkley outstanding in his first game of the year.
Yeah, and Bob, if you're a New York Giants fan or if you're the GM of the Giants, you know, what? That was a gut punch. In that one, that was a total gut punch because he was so well. He played so well, and you got to play him twice a year. You know, down I-95, you know, an hour drive down the road. So that was tough there. So Philly looks like, I mean, because Green Bay's a good team.
And they were dicing them up.
Yep.
But the big news there, Jordan Love got hurt late, sprained MCL, 3 to 6 weeks perhaps. Yeah. He's going to be out of line up there for the Pack.
Yeah, did they sign Tannehill, or they're going to sign Tannehill, Green Bay is. So that kind of changes the division. And I mean, you look at that division, everybody won but Green Bay in that division. You know, Minnesota was kind of this. Sam Darnold was kind of the shock to
like
everybody.
12 for 12, 13 for 13 to start
the
game.
Yeah, he was unbelievable. Had over 100 quarterback rating and everything. I mean, the Giants do suck, but he played well. The Vikings played well. Defensively, they played real well, but Daniel Jones is not much to be.
Yeah, he got sacked a bunch of times, threw two picks, and to your point, they signed him, let Barkley walk.
Yep.
And now, in all likelihood, new coach, new quarterback heading into 2025, unless they turn things around dramatically. Yep. And, I mean, what was positive about that from a Giants perspective? And for Minnesota, yeah, it's just the Giants, or do you think this is something you could possibly build on? It has to help Darnold's confidence, obviously.
Oh, yeah, with Darnold's confidence? Absolutely. And Kevin O'Connell, he's done a hell of a job with the kid. That's the other thing that I say too is, and Brian Flores defensively, you know, it's going to be interesting. I mean, we're not going to know, Bob, after the first quarter, you know, once we play four games, we'll kind of have a feel for, you know, are they got a chance or don't they have a chance? They going to be good, not going to be good.
You want to get into what happened yesterday in the NFL? We're taking your phone calls at 410-583-1057. Ravens were off because they played Thursday night in Kansas City. They get the Raiders coming up here Sunday, the home opener. Raiders lose to the Chargers. And I'm going to take a little victory lap here, if you don't mind. Because I said J.K. Dobbins, I think, is still a good football player.
Yep.
And is going to have a good year. The qualifier is if he stays healthy. And after a first half of snooze-fest football, both teams, that game was a yawner.
Yeah.
In the first half, the Chargers broke out big time in the second half. Because J.K. Dobbins broke out. 135 and a touchdown. All right, you texted
Doesn't
me.
Have the speed.
Yeah, it didn't look like he was bursting to the end zone, but he was moving the chains.
Yeah,
what
yes,
he did
was.
At Ohio State, and he did in Baltimore when he was healthy.
The thing that kind of shocked me, Bob, was, now, would you have said that Greg Roman was the coordinator there with their formations? And me either.
Well, things might change because their receiving core leaves a lot. That McConkey had a nice game.
Yeah. But, yeah, I was surprised. I thought they would be running the ball, not in shotgun so much, and all those types of things. And, yeah, that looked nothing like the Ravens looked in 19 and 20 and stuff with Giro. And they were throwing the ball around and everything else. So, the other thing I was thinking about last night was, you know, soon as Jim Harbaugh got home, that John and all his coaches were on the phones with the Charger coaches because the Ravens play the Raiders next week.
Yeah.
So what did you think? What did you see? You know, because, I mean, all those guys on the staff, his two coordinators are both former Ravens coaches. So, you know, they're on the phone with those guys getting the intel.
And watching the red zone, because we didn't have the Chargers game here locally, but Antonio Pierce took some heat because he punted on 4th and 1 around midfield, and then the Chargers wound up scoring on the ensuing drive because they got a long run from J.K. Dobbins there.
Yeah, Dobbins. Yeah, he went. Yeah, he
it was a close
ran
game,
it down to the 5.
He elected to play conservative, and it came back to get him.
Yeah, and they didn't run the ball very well either, but yeah, it was a good game. And Bob, I mean, during the game, what was crazy was you hear the Raiders guys telling the fans to be quiet. And it was at the Chargers field. They said it was a predominantly Raider fan base.
Look,
there.
And I get it. And apparently that was in Atlanta, too. A lot of Steelers fans traveled down to,
because you saw
Stadium.
What? Come on, fans.
Yeah. But San Diego, whatever the political ramifications were for letting them leave, and I guess Spanos obviously took the dough.
Right.
They were always going to be second fiddle. They should have stayed in San Diego, figured out a way to get a new stadium, because now they're always going to be the other team in Los Angeles. But that's their problem. Terps lose. We'll get into that. We got Jeff Ehrman from Inside MD Sports joining us later in the show. Oh, Kevin Willard did get a massive basketball commitment for the class of 2025. Oh, nice. Marcus Jackson, Baltimore native, now playing in Arizona, four-star forward, athletic, is all get out. He committed, so that's a good thing to do. If you're on the phones, we'll get you. We got the AFC North report coming up. You want to vent about the Orioles offense, and you have every right to do so. The manager starting to complain about the lack of runs. Anthony Santander is starting to complain, and he's part of it. Off to Fenway, half game out of first, only 18 games left in the regular season. Kate Povich, are you up to the challenge that is Fenway Park? NFL action week number one game tonight. Jets taking on the 49ers. You can hear it on 105.7 The Fan. We'll talk about that as the show goes on. Definitely talk about it with Howard Balzer. Coming up around 12:30, got NFL lunch as well. We'll look back at our picks for the weekend. But we're going to start doing something every Monday here on the show. We're going to get the fancy imaging to go along with it. You know how we do the AL East report for baseball, which we'll be doing later in the show. Now it's the AFC North report, and I'd like to, I got a song in my head, and I got John Facenda talking, it's the AFC North. But we don't have all of that fun stuff. What we do have, however, are highlights of the games, like Pittsburgh is underdogs 3.5 at Atlanta, taking on old Kirk Cousins and his big fancy contract down there at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And boy, it was all about the Steelers in the end, wasn't it?
Boswell drills it straight away and keeps on doing it. And miscommunication there in the timing. It deflected off of the motion man and TJ Watt's on top of it.
That's Fox with the call. Chris Boswell kicked 6 field goals. TJ Watt had a sack, and you heard the fumble recovery there as Kirk Cousins had all sorts of problems getting comfortable there against that Steelers defense. 18-10. Final score in Atlanta, and all you heard was Kirk Cousins and his new offense with the Falcons. Watch out for Kyle Pitts, who did score. Bijan Robinson, Drake London, blah, blah, blah. But that was about as one-sided a physical domination as you're going to see. Cousins, 2 picks. Justin Fields started for the inactive Russell Wilson. Didn't put the ball in the end zone, but didn't screw things up either.
I think that's exactly how Pittsburgh wanted to play it. I think Atlanta wanted to throw it around and get all those guys to, you know, get Pitts the ball, Bijan. You know, I mean, they didn't average, you know, Pitts didn't have anything. He averaged, you know, 8.7. London only had 2 catches. And Pittsburgh played they wanted to play. They played physical. Let's make it a road game. They're on the road. Let's make it defense and special teams. And that's what they did.
So Kirk Cousins got the big dough, leaving Minnesota to Atlanta, lays a dud in his first game with the Falcons.
He didn't look comfortable. Well, TJ Watt was a man-child in that. I mean, he was a beast. They couldn't block him. They were having 2 people try to block him. He was unbelievable. You know, he recovered a fumble, and he was a freak in that game.
Also, I'm glad I did not get an AR Survivor League this year because my absolute lock of the week, and we'll get to that when we get to the picks, was Cincinnati at home against New England.
Oh, me too.
Well, if you missed any of this, it was an ugly return for Joe Burrow, shall we say.
Play of the second quarter. Running play. It's Stevenson. Touchdown. Patriots strike first.
Ramondre Stevenson, 120 yards and a touchdown, CBS on the call. Joe Burrow was sacked 3 times as the New England defense was all over Cincinnati like a Kmart suit. Jamar Chase, he played after not practicing for the entirety of the summer. I mean, he wasn't poor, but you know, Zach Moss scored a touchdown, replacing Mixon, who's now in Houston, which we'll get to later in the show, and he had a big game. Yeah. But Cincinnati, Burrow's first game since he got hurt on that Thursday night against the Ravens last November, M&T Bank Stadium. As 7.5-point favorites, they lose 16-10. So an inauspicious return for Joe Burrow and his new haircut. But New England, how about that? Going in, and we'll get to the Feeble Five and all that tomorrow. I think we kind of viewed them as one of the worst teams. And they still may turn out to be. Jacoby Brissett was efficient in the start, but Cincinnati laying a gigantic egg at home, just like Atlanta did against the Steelers.
Yeah, you know what, New England, they didn't allow any big plays, Bob, you know, and that's what kind of Cincinnati lives off of. And they couldn't run the ball, and they only threw it for 164. So they only had 200-something yards total offense. So the New England just shut them down. Physically, they won. The teams that out-physical teams, They won week one. It just seemed like kind of like the college games, Bob, on Saturday. You know, like all the teams you expect to win were struggling early in the games, and then some of them came back, some didn't.
And then finally in the AFC North in Cleveland, the late afternoon game, Tom Brady's debut on Fox, Dallas Cowboys, Dak Prescott got paid, now the highest paid player in the history of the NFL, and he came out and said, hey, let's earn some money against Cleveland's number one ranked defense.
Third and five, pressure right in Prescott's face, letting it go. He's got a man for the touchdown. It's caught by Brandon Cooks. Third down, penalty flies. Watson in deep trouble, and he is sacked.
Well, 33-17 final score. You heard Dak Prescott. It was Fox on the call. Dak to Brandon Cooks.
Yep.
Six sacks of Deshaun Watson. Zeke Elliott scored a touchdown, wearing a different number for the Cowboys. Demolition, 33-17. Deshaun Watson, he had a brutal afternoon, 24-45, two picks. Did throw a touchdown pass, but sacked six times. Looks like a shell of his former self. And, I mean, where's the mobility that he had when he was with Houston? And I guess the arm strength compromised because of the shoulder or whatever, but he looks like a bottom half of the NFL quarterback, and he has, quite frankly, for a long time.
Well, I mean, Bob, all you got to do is look at, you know, how they sucked last year. Then Joe Flacco comes in, and they're throwing for 300 yards, and they're scoring a ton of points. If he has another game like that this next week, I think it might be Jameis Winston time.
Well, Jameis can get the ball down the field. I mean, yep. You, like Joe Flacco, sometimes it goes to the other team. But that investment they made financially to Deshaun Watson, and we'll get to the rest of the NFL scores later in the show. I don't know if anybody knows, Baker Mayfield threw four touchdown passes yesterday for Tampa.
And then on the bad side for Cleveland, Bob, Njoku, high ankle sprain, and he's going to be out probably 4 to 6 weeks. And when Flacco was in, he was all pro.
Guns a-blazing.
He was unbelievable.
Well, at AFC North, Pittsburgh Steelers are in first place. Who would have thunk it?
Yeah, 1-0.
1-0. Ravens, they're back on the field Sunday against the Raiders, who lost to the Chargers. We'll get into all the other scores later on in the program. We'll come back, take your phone calls at 410-583-1057. Orioles lose 2 out of 3 to the Rays. They score 4 runs in 4 games. They score 0 runs yesterday, 0-for-7, with runners in scoring position at Fenway, taking on the Red Sox tonight at 7:10. Baltimore baseball tonight coming up, brought to you by Salvo Auto Parts at 6. It's Tim Barbalace, Jim Hunter, if I'm not mistaken, this evening here on the Fan. Kate Povich looking for win number 3. And he could use some run support because it might be one of these high-scoring Fenway Mondays. Oriole bats, it's time to get hot. You're trying to win the division. You want that week off for the 5 days. You're trying to get yourself healthy, and you need that rest. Okay, last year might have killed your momentum, but this year you're going to need it. So let's get percolated here against the Red Sox, and we'll talk to Matt about the struggles with the offense and who some of the healthy bats and arms could be returning to the equation here in the next week or two. 18 games left in the regular season. Talk about Maryland's loss to Michigan State later in the show with Jeff Ehrman from Inside MD Sports, but a big, big basketball commitment for the class of 25 for Kevin Willard. Let's get out to the phones. Let's go get Shiloh in Baltimore. Shiloh, thanks for holding. What is up? Shiloh. Why no Shiloh? Let's go to Jordan in Annapolis. Jordan, how are you?
Hey, guys, how are you doing?
Good.
What's up, Jordan?
So, hey, I just want to talk real quick. So, you know, Ravens, you can say what you want about that game. I think Lamar had a great drive to end the game, and everyone's kind of giving us crap about the offensive line. But I just kind of want to hear your thoughts because, if I'm not mistaken, this time last year, Gardner Minshew came into our house, dicked and dunked our defense very well, and they got that win. What you got to understand, too, is that they have Christian Wilkins and that Max Crosby. And I just want to hear your thoughts on where are we going with this offensive line and this guard situation here? Because I feel like you kind of had to put Falele there because Chris Jones is just – he's a monster. You know, you had to put a big guy on a big guy there. So what do you think our game plan is with this week since we got a pretty dang good D-tackle and a top-5 pass rusher in the league? And, see, you know, where do you think we're going to head with our guard situation?
No, I think heading anywhere. I think Voorhees is going to be the starter at left guard, and I think Falele is the starter at right guard. And to me, it wasn't just about the one game. Filele's been starting since day one at the
camp.
Right guard. Yeah, he played every preseason game. So he just has problems with quick guys. I mean, Chris Jones, when he went around him, I mean, you blinked and he went around him that quick. But I mean, who are you going to put in there? There's nobody else to put in there. That's the problem. And McCary's not going to go in and play guard because Rosengard's not ready to play tackle against Max Crosby. And then the following week, he's really not ready to play against Micah Parsons either.
And Crosby did have a sack yesterday for the Raiders, even though they lost. And then you got Russo and Von Miller looming in a couple of weeks, too, against Buffalo there. Let's go to we got there. Arbutus and Mark. Mark, what's happening, buddy?
Hey, how you doing? Couple of questions. Number one, the three penalties or four penalties Thursday night were ticky-tack on the line.
Yeah, they were. Was there any other called yesterday? I didn't.
And I watched three or four games yesterday, and there was not one single call about what happened Thursday night against the Ravens. So a memo must have come down to say, let's cool it or something like that.
No, the memo came down prior to, and then everybody watched Thursday night's game. And what do you think the O-line coaches and the head coach was telling his guys in their meeting on Friday? Hey, they're looking to call this. And then you don't think when the head coaches, they meet with the officials prior to the game, about an hour and a half before the game, they have an officials meeting, and how you calling this? That'd be my first question to the official prior to, how are you calling this? You know, because Hockley's crew, I mean, they wanted to make a statement.
Yeah, I think they have like five flags in each pocket
in
that one. Let's go to Shiloh in Baltimore. Shiloh, what's up?
Hey, can y'all hear me now?
Yeah,
hey,
man, we can hear you.
Hey, Vinny and Rob, man, look, Hey, look, I'm a little tongue-tied because I'm a little upset, right?
Uh-oh.
I'm going back. Hey, Vinny. Now, we talk about this O-line, right?
Mm, yep.
I'm a little mad at DaCosta, right? And the reason why I say this is because when you lost those three guys, right, and then you got standing on the back end of his career, you lost three guys. You did nothing really to help this offense line. Yeah, you draft one guy, but he's a rookie, man, right? And I don't have enough time to talk about that, but I really hold this DaCosta responsible for that, right? But Vane, let me touch base on something else real fast. We all keep talking about Lamar Jackson against Mahomes, right? And I understand the players play the game. Can we switch it for a minute and say Harbaugh against Andy Reid? Because for some reason, Vane, I'm gonna give it to you. For some reason, Harbaugh don't select the guy that's, you know, hey Vane, check this out real fast, right?
All right.
Look, check this out. Remember last year? When we beat all San Francisco, the world's up, and we beat remember we was knocking teams around last year, right, Ready?
Yep.
Answer this one question for me, please, because this has been on my mind since Thursday. Why every time Harbaugh goes against a guy like Andy Reid, he forget all about what he's supposed to have, whatever he got as a coach? Why it seems like it falls on Lamar's show because he's a quarterback, right? Everybody wasn't playing Lamar. But what about your head coach, man? Because when Kansas City wins, I'm about – Mahomes and Reed gets the credit. When the Ravens lose a lot of time, Lamar, you know, he dropped the dirty. And I'm sorry, man. We haven't won a Super Bowl in 12 years, man. Every time we get in the playoffs, when it matters, every time, you know, we go against a team like Mahomes, because they don't be blowing us out. We lost about 7 points each game last year and this year.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day.
Hey, Shiloh, we got to run, man. I appreciate the call. John Harbaugh gets drilled.
Yeah, Monday they lose, he gets drilled.
And Friday, people were ready to drive him to the airport and get him out of Dodge. And, you know, Lamar Jackson, if we're going to criticize, and we're going back to Thursday's game. All right, Zay Flowers was open. He wasn't even the intended receiver on that particular play. But you thought, Vinny, that he had likely in the corner the play before.
Yeah, likely was wide open. He overthrew him. And then what about all the miscommunication on defense? You know, I mean, that – there was a lot of issues in that game. There was a lot of growing pains, let's just say that, in that game. There was a lot of good. There was a lot of good. I mean, because we thought that they tied it up and they were down one, they were going for two to win.
Go for the dub.
Right. So, and then, is that Harms' fault?
Let me get high on the phone.
Toe?
Hold on. What are you doing with the lineup tonight? And what's going on with the lack of communication with the Ravens secondary? You were at practice. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7. The Fan. Will come back, talk more Ravens. Charles Walker from the Sun, whip around 11:15. A sinner won the U.S. Open, and he may have sinned in multiple ways if you're following this story. And we'll talk to Matt Wyrick, also from the Baltimore Sun, about the Orioles, whose bats have gone sleepy time at the wrong time of the year. And basically, it's been 2 months. Can they awaken in time?